Brian might be now ready. I'm going to introduce the very hard-working chairman of the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, Brian Cute. And Brian, over to you.
Thank you very much, Peter, and thank you to the board for this opportunity to interact with you today. I'll be getting up on the screen a copy of the recommendations or proposed draft recommendations that the review team has produced shortly. And the primary purpose of this session is to receive your feedback from the directors. The proposed draft recommendations have been put out for comment, and the comment period is closed on December 3rd. We've received a goodly number of comments from the community. We just had a good interaction with the GAC, and in the case of their interaction with the GAC, we actually received some very specific, concrete recommendations with respect to language, potential language changes. So we're here to listen and then to walk through each of the recommendations, but first listen, hear your reactions, and understand what you think where the work is, and understanding that we have to produce final recommendations to you at the end of December, and this is an opportunity for us to make modifications to what we've put on the table. So with that, I turn it back to you, Peter, and open it up to the board.
Excellent. Well, if they're still not up, is somebody posting those? The board's had the recommendations and has had some time, has been encouraged to read them and to prepare some questions. I suppose just make the obvious introductory comments. The whole thing is driven by the actual text of the affirmation of commitments itself, which sets out, first of all, what the commitments are, and then sets out that there will be four review teams reviewing ICANN's performance against those commitments. And this team has been looking at all those under the capitals of accountability and transparency. And as the report sets out, four different working groups set up to do that. The working group chairs are all here and did their various bits, one on the board, one on the GAC, one on transparency and accountability in relation to public participation, and then a section in relation to the appeals mechanisms and appeal review of board decisions. So the recommendations are grouped as a result of those four working groups. So I suppose we should begin with the first one, which is in relation to the board itself, and the structure and the appointments of the board, and references be made in there to the various reviews of the board and the various reports that have been done, and come up with a series of recommendations. I don't actually have them in front of me. Any questions or comments about any of those recommendations? Bruce. And please, let's not make this a back and forth this way. Let's have it going this way as well. This is actually, think of this room as a great big round table that we're all sitting facing each other. Bruce.
Thanks, Peter. So this is on the sort of first 10 recommendations, essentially, is it? Under board governance, et cetera? Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
So number 5 said implement a compensation scheme for board directors. Just interested to understand what was considered to be board directors. Did that include liaisons as well? Because effectively today those are treated as board members. I just wanted to... That's one just question of clarification if that was considered or not.
Yes, it was in Boston, and our conclusion was voting directors only.
Thank you. And the second question on Section 8, where you're talking about publishing materials and director statements, I guess one thing that would be useful to see from some other parts of ICANN as well, like I don't know whether you thought that should apply to the GAC as well and its processes. Providing the briefing materials and the statements made by individual members. It's something to think about anyway, whether Section 8 would apply to the GAC in a reciprocal way. I'm just wondering, do you consider the detailed minutes that you see today sufficient? Because we have a lot of debate about what is the detailed minutes. Are our minutes too detailed, not detailed enough? I'm just interested in feedback on that. I accept the briefing materials often aren't public, but a lot of work's gone into minutes. I'm just wanting to understand whether the current minutes are okay or not.
Bruce, that's a hard question to answer because the new process for the minutes, taken together with the briefing materials and the minutes, that process has only been around for a couple of meetings, but the general feeling was that, and this is obviously from input from the community. That the general feeling was that there isn't enough information provided in the round. So, for why a decision has been made. The minute itself might be, you know, very clear. We decide X, but that's not really. There's more to it than that. There's the why and the how, and that's really what this goes to, I think.
I think what you're saying, that's actually not minutes. What you're talking about is the rationale for the decisions, which would generally be in the briefing papers. I mean, you don't generally have out of a discussion, a bit like a discussion we're having here. You would just say Bruce Tonkin asked the question.
Sure.
What does question number 9 mean? I mean, that's what the minutes have in them. That's not the same as.
But if you if you read 8, it says promptly publish all appropriate materials related to the decision making, including minutes. So minutes is one aspect of a number of different documents.
Harold.
Speaking as a director who will not have to do this, do you want to... is the recommendation of the team that they would like to figure out why each individual director took the position it took, or do they just want to figure out why the board overall took the decision? I'm not asking what the right answer is. I'm asking what the ATRT was intending when they wrote this.
I think the answer to that, Harold, is the reference to director statements is to the extent that they exist. I mean, it's entirely possible that you would under one vote, a director will choose to make a statement and another director would not. If you look at the way, for example, that resolutions are passed in the public meeting, often there are directors who choose to make statements and directors who choose not to. And the point being that those statements, in the same way that they're read out at a public meeting, should be published from another sort of board meeting.
So that's just the stuff that goes into the present rather verbose minutes. You're not asking for me to put a 5-page deposition on proving that I read all the input papers.
No.
Thank you.
Mike Pelley.
Yep.
Harold, if I could perhaps elaborate, not on the team, but what I'd like to see. When I was on the board, one of the things that I saw was what I call preparation. And when directors would arrive at the beginning of the week, they would have 6 days to get up to speed on what the issues are. From walking to your hotel room, there's people coming up to you in your face, giving you their opinion on what the issue is. What I noticed was what happened on the board meetings, the teleconferences, not the in-person ones. And that's where I saw a difference in my fellow board directors as far as preparation. Because it's one thing to show up and listen to people, which is good, but when you have to sit there and go through 400 pages of material on a telephonic meeting where you may not have that face-to-face interaction, that's different. And one of the reasons I think that telephonic recording of the board would be important as well as statements is that is how I see how I want to measure directors. And I think that's important from the stakeholders because, one, as a participant in the GNSO, we're responsible for electing 2 directors. So I'd like to see how they're performing in the meetings. And as well, last year as well as this year, I'm serving on a nominating committee. So these are some of the data points that I would like to see from a performance standpoint to make a fact-based determination.
If I could just say the question is why not record the telephone and put meetings?
My response, you were saying that you wanted it to go this way. So my response back to Harold was I don't want necessarily a 5-page deposition. What I want to do is I want to see how the board directors are prepared for their meetings and what they're raising, the issues that they're raising. Are they well briefed? And as I said, whether I agree or disagree, I just want to see that there's preparation.
Thank you. If I can clarify, this session is a session between the review team and the board, and I apologize if we didn't make that clear at the outset. It is an open meeting for the community and the public to attend, but really the intention here is to allow the board to give the review team direct feedback with regard to the recommendations and have an interaction. The review team has a public session tomorrow from 2 o'clock to 3:30. So I apologize to anyone else from the community in the room, but if you wouldn't mind just holding your thoughts till tomorrow and allow us to have an interaction with the board, we'd appreciate that. Thank you very much. So to directors, Harold, please. Yeah.
So just kind of response to that, but also in the response to the report. The most important thing I do on the board is to keep my mouth shut. It means, in my case, I've read the documents prepared. I don't have any clarifying comments or questions that would help to improve the issue, and I allow the meeting to go on. You will not find in the minutes any indication of how well I prepared for this meeting. You will not find in the minutes any indication of why I took the position I took. I think the idea of gaining insights into the board members' state of mind when they took decisions by publishing minutes is an illusion, and you will be sorely disappointed, disappointing people is not a good thing. I see where you're coming from, I don't think what you're proposing will get you to where you want to be. The proposal is fine, but it won't get you what you want.
So, Harold, just for clarity, so that we don't get confused with what is Mike's opinion, the ATRT recommendations got nothing to do with your state of mind as such or whether you're doing your job efficiently. The purpose of the ATRT recommendation is that there was a significant degree of feedback from all sorts of areas ranging from every SO and AC across all of the ICANN community that said that there are often times when it is unclear why what is decided has been decided. And what we need is some mechanisms that provide a greater degree of transparency. If you take as a simple example the current decision that was made, and I forget when exactly, but there was a decision made in respect to vertical integration. Every single piece of feedback I have so far received from anybody, nothing to do with the ATRT, just to do with me, has indicated that no one has the foggiest idea how the board reached that decision. That, and I don't want to, I'm not, this is not about discussing individual issues, but it's that sort of thing that led to this recommendation. So it doesn't have to do with whether you're efficient as a board member. It's much more to do with how the community perceives the decisions that you make.
Dennis. Sorry. Ray.
Yes. Going to the statement, director's statements relating to significant decisions or votes. I'm in the same area with Harold here, in that statements that I may make during the course of a deliberation may in the end have nothing to do with the way I vote. I may be on one side of an argument and in the end vote against what I was arguing. And so that has nothing to do at all with the final outcome, because I was convinced by an argument someplace else. So I'm with Harold. I don't really know what you're going to get other than you're going to see that there was some deliberation. And quite frankly, there are some questions that are discussed in the board that board members never say a word about. So there are a few people that talk a lot about it, and there are some that don't say anything. Now, if you want to make sure that everyone says something so the board meetings get longer, I mean, you could get that way too. So I'm with Harold. You know, what is it you're really looking for, and is this really the appropriate way to do it?
Thank you. Fabio?
Thank you. Yeah. First of all, may I say that I find these recommendations very exciting and very interesting and very good. I'm quite delighted with them. I'm happy to say that about half of them, these are the board ones, we at least started some work on them, which I think is good, but there's much more that needs to be done. I think some of the mechanisms that may be proposed, like the discussion that's just gone on, may not be the appropriate way to achieve the objectives, but I think the objectives are very important. Understanding how the decisions were made and why they were made is very important, but I don't think you'd actually get that by tape recordings of the board meetings, grandstanding to have their records, their notes to the community recorded, etc., etc. It's not a parliament after all. But in more detail, I'd like to change the topic and talk about the first recommendation, at least in the version I have here. Establish formal mechanisms for identifying the collective skill set required by the board, which we have started some work on. But just to let you know that the great sensitivity here has been the independence of the NOMCOM. And there's been a great concern in the board not to do anything that might be seen to affect or imply that we're trying to affect the independence of the NOMCOM. Now, I believe what you've written here is absolutely right, but I'd like to get some feedback from you on that concern about the independence of the NOMCOM, protecting that, while at the same time doing what I think is the right thing here to advise the NOMCOM. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis, and I can speak to that point. That sensitivity was recognized, the importance of not putting the board in a position where it's viewed as dictating or influencing in any way, we recognize as important. At the same time, it was a fair question and input from the community that perhaps the skill set of directors could be focused in a different way. And with the board feeling as though it should not intervene, I think we're the mechanism to help stimulate that. The question then becomes implementation, and how can we implement this recommendation in a way that keeps that fine and appropriate balance. Fabio.
I'm surprised by the sensitivity that has been raised by some words that perhaps will have to be modified. And I would like to reinforce what Chris said, to put paid, to close all this idea that somehow one wants to know what the directors are saying in the discussion. I'm personally convinced that their deliberations should be confidential, because in the heat of the discussion, people will say a lot of things that not necessarily they want to see recorded. But what one wants to understand, what were the arguments that were confronted, that were put across in the discussion? Now, in a number of other organizations, I quote just the Federal Communication Commission, you have a practice where especially the commissioners that were in the minority usually put out statements spelling out their arguments. If some members of the board of ICANN wanted to do that, that would be welcome. They're not forced to do that. But this is what one is interested in, to hear what kind of arguments were used in the discussion to understand it. Absolutely, we were not concerned about the performance of the individual directors, of knowing what their views were, and so on.
Thank you, Fabio. Thomas, I believe you're next in the queue, and then Rita and Bruce.
Yeah, thank you. I have a pretty straightforward question. For recommendations 6 and 7, could you maybe clarify kind of what you actually mean there? Because it says, like, 6 is clarify which issues are considered at board level in order to improve visibility among stakeholders. Is it just to identify what we discuss or to make it available in advance? I'm not quite sure what that recommendation is getting at.
Well, there was a fair amount of discussion on the review team about the first notion of recommendations helping to make it crystal clear that the board is a preeminent organization in ICANN and that the board needs to take primary responsibility in the operations of the organization. In a bottom-up policy-making body, we also recognize that, you know, there are times when bottom-up policy-making is absolute and primary, and there are certain things that the board in its role has to do for the organization that can blur the lines between the two. So in the context of recognizing those dynamics and those tensions, this recommendation, to the extent that the board in the future is going to take a lead role on an issue or promote a particular undertaking, that there be some clarity, there be some articulation around that. And I know I recognize that it's not the most clearly written recommendation of the bunch. Do you want to elaborate on that?
only just say I agree with you. I think we can probably put some more clarity into that, although I think it actually reads, if you read the report itself and the recommendation, it makes more sense, but we could perhaps do some tweaking there.
Yes, we're absolutely open to suggested language changes. We've taken some concrete ones from the GAC. If this can help clarify things, we're open to that. But as Chris said, too, these are just the recommendations without the context of the report itself, and the report's language can add some color to what we intended here.
All right, and then the same for kind of question 7. Because it suggests that there's some kind of consultation that needs to take place that's not taking place.
Well, again, there's nothing formal, there's nothing written down anywhere that says that if the board decides to take on an issue, whatever that may be, that there is a mechanism in place to consult with the relevant SOs and ACs, and I think that was the intention of that particular recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, just sort of, you know, I'm speaking for myself here, and not for the board in any means. But I mean, I think there's certainly a sense the board doesn't really want to step in unless it's forced to. And so, the notion that we're jumping in to do things is something that is not something we generally like to do anyway. So to sort of create more mechanisms to allow that or to facilitate that doesn't seem right either. But
and that was understood. I have Rita. Rita.
Thanks, Brian and Chris. I just want to thank everybody from the ATRT for this report. I think there are a lot of things in here that are quite helpful. I mean, as Mike Palaish said, I think there's been a general feeling on the board that things need to be streamlined, especially with respect to publishing reasons for our decisions. We've heard numerous times that people want to understand the rationale for important decisions. We've heard that people want to see the staff papers, and we're working on doing that. So I think many of these recommendations are very typical and common sense, and we're iterating towards that, so I appreciate these recommendations. I just want to comment. I think it's somewhat ironic that we're talking about an accountability and transparency process when we are asked to come here and comment on the draft in this ad hoc way. So this maybe is another thing you guys can take for your report, which is we have not had a board discussion on this report. We were not told that we were going to be sort of doing ad hoc comments like this. I thought that we were going to be told by you all more, here's our report, here's some questions we may have as we're moving towards finalizing the report. So I think some of these process recommendations and being more clear will actually go a long way in helping with this final report, ultimately, Brian. But we're talking about a draft here in some random ad hoc way, which to me does not seem like the best way to achieve some kind of analysis.
Okay, well, I apologize for the disconnect, but the intention was, and I guess could have been more clearly communicated, to have an interaction with the board to get your reactions to the proposed draft recommendations. These are not final, and we would not move to final draft final recommendations without some feedback from the board. So I, to the extent there was a disconnect there, I apologize on behalf of the review team, but you know, I hope that it's been a very good session so far, and hopefully we can continue in an interactive way.
Seems ironic that the board is commenting on a report that's going to be about the board. So I understand why we want to do that, I guess, or why you're seeking that, and I appreciate that. It just seems a little bit strange in this way to be doing this.
Well, let me put a fine point on it then, because one of the things I want to get to, and this first part of our interaction was supposed to be open to see if there are any distinct reactions from directors. What I'd like to get to before we close down is walking through each of the recommendations, because the challenge here is implementation, okay? And we need to hear from the board, are these clear? Are these implementable? This is a very important issue for us before we draft final recommendations. And are there any barriers to implementing these? And I was going to turn the conversation there soon enough after getting some kind of open reaction. So that is the intent of this session. And again, I apologize if there was any misunderstanding as to the nature of the interaction. Bruce?
I suspect we're probably going to run out of time to do that properly, but and the intent, just so I understand what you're doing with the sessions, we'll then go on to the next block of questions, will we? Yeah. So still on the first 10. So firstly, I'd just reiterate what Dennis said. I think it's an excellent report, and I think there's a lot of really good suggestions here. And I think the majority of what I'm seeing in the first 10 we can implement. So my questions are more clarification-related than trying to change anything. But I will just reiterate that the board as a whole is trying to stay out of policy. And so 6 and 7 just need to be put in that context. We don't see ourselves as the policy body, and I think it's a mistake when we are the policy body. That usually means something's failed. And that's one of the things that I think as a community we need to think more about, is we have some policy failures. Who is as a policy failure in the GNSO? That's why it comes up to the board. And so the question is, what is the role of the board when there's a policy failure? And I define policy failure as where there's a problem, but the community can't reach agreement on solving that problem. We saw it with vertical integration was another example. We asked the GNSO to give us some advice. We didn't get consensus advice. That's a policy failure. So those are the issues that are coming to the board, policy failure. So some thinking about that in here might help. The other thing is that it seems to be a little bit of an over-focus on taking advice from the GAC versus other advisory committees. One, just a tweak that I'd suggest under 10 is you've got why the matter was considered by the board, what consultation occurred, what input was received. I'd suggest perhaps adding another line to that, which could be what advice from advisory committees was sought. Because we're having this problem not just with the GAC, but with RSAC and SSAC and whatever other SACs we've got, we're not really formally asking for the advice. They're not quite sure where they stand. So
that word was sought, right? Yeah. What advice was sought, not what advice was received?
Yeah, that's right. I think okay. What advice was sought, because I think the board's got to get better at... You covered this in the GAC section. I'm just saying it's more general than the GAC. That's why I'd suggest put it in 10, which is what advice have we sought from advisory committees before we make a decision? Because we've got to get better at doing that, I think.
Thanks very much, Bruce. Ray?
Thanks. I'm with everyone else in terms of appreciating what you've done here. Bruce did steal a little bit of my thunder because I had the same comment regarding what does the board do in the event of policy failure. And so I won't go into...
Policy development failure, right?
Right. So I won't go into that. I want to cover three other areas. First of all, in the notion of advising on skill sets, I think there needs to be some tempering in that thought, in that if you're not careful, you end up looking for specific skill sets and you start generating specific skill sets around certain seats and so forth. So we need to have some care in there, because you're better served by the board across all of its members having a larger degree of familiarity with many things, and then as necessary maybe receiving specialized training in special areas. That because in the end the board is going to have to be able to make a decision, so you have to be able to at least understand what the specialist is telling you if you're going to try and make an informed decision. The second thing is the notion of minority reports. There already is a provision in the bylaws regarding assent by board members, and it clearly states that if a board member votes in the negative or abstains from voting, that they can, if they so desire, to insert a reason as to why they did that. And that opportunity is not in the bylaws right now offered to anyone making an assent. So if I vote for something, I cannot make a statement that says I this is why I voted yes. However, if I vote no, I can say this is why I voted no. Or if I abstain, I can say this is why I chose not to vote. So there's some of those mechanisms that are already there. And so I think that maybe you need to go back and look at that a little bit in terms of the concepts of trying to figure out why board members did what they did. The third item is the consultation issue. It's certainly written into the ASO MOU, which is de facto a part of the bylaws, because if you look at the bylaws with regards to the ASO, it says do what the ASO MOU says. And in that, there is a provision clearly stated for the board to make inquiries and to ask and request policy considerations be done in specific areas. So that provision, I know, already exists there. So I think maybe you should go back and take another look at that as well.
Okay, thank you. Just quickly, I saw we have two hands in the queue, and then I actually do, picking up on the conversation with Rita, want to start at number one and go through, and what's most important to us is the implementation orientation. Is this clear? Is it implementable? Are there barriers? Please flag them for us, and if we can go through all of them, that would be helpful. But, Ray, and to your point on the skill sets issue, there was a broad discussion about that. There was even discussion about, you know, the fact that there are professional directors associations out there in the world, and should we be recommending going that direction? There's recognition by the review team of the good work that's been done in skills building within the board already, and we'd want to put an additional emphasis on that. We take that point. And with regard to a director having the ability to make an additional statement as to why they voted in the affirmative for a measure that passed, I think that sounds like a wonderful thing to add to the mix if the board chooses to do so. I have Kuo Wei.
I read this statement. A serious question about it. I don't know. Is this whole statement? Did you ever check the California law? Because of every board member, we are binding by the California law. What is the board position will be? So if those of the California law is against to some of the statement, I wonder what we can do. And that's the first question. So I will wish the ATR eventually you are going to come out with an official statement. You had better going to double check to the California law to binding the board member. You know, because the California law is a much officially and more, you know, binding us. And second of all is if we go through all this stuff, I think it's a good study and a good analysis. And I think all the board member, before we go to apply for this position, we believe the multi-stakeholder, we believe the transparency, but at the same time we are fighting with the times. So if that kind of process are going to be delayed, the decision or you know, against the community expect, then I think that must be also be considered.
Thank you, Kuo Wei. And to answer your first question, we did receive from staff California law, a memo with respect to California law that spoke to the responsibilities of directors and the contours of their responsibility. But the point is well taken. Thank you for raising it, and that should be in our report.
And Berkman.
Yes, and from the independent expert Berkman as well. So, one more question. Sorry, Mike, and then we'll go to the top of the list and walk through. Mike, please.
Very quickly. Just so that we don't get too far away from the mutual backslapping, it's nice to hear the positives in terms of efforts that were initiated by the board before or during the tenure of the research that was done. It's nice to hear that recognized. I think it's still valuable that it's incorporated in the report and the recommendations to make sure that those efforts and initiatives continue. There's some very useful material over here as a whole. The one item that slightly concerned me is there was a reference with regard to board compensation to implementing the recommendation of the Boston Consulting Group. And it's, to me, that recommendation is not entirely clear whether it's only in respect of compensation or whether we look at some of the other recommendations of the Boston Consulting Group. And my concern is primarily that we seem, around that review, to have chosen very selectively those parts of the review that suited us and to have ignored other parts of the review where we felt that the reviewers didn't understand the unique and special nature of the board and the constituencies and therefore the recommendations to decrease the size of the board. We've in fact flouted and have proceeded to increase the size of our board.
Michael, thank you. A couple of things just for clarity. Yes, so that there is no difficulty, we are specifically referring to the recommendation in respect to payment of board directors from the Boston Consulting Group. There is other comment in the document noting that a number of reviews have taken place of a number of things, including the board and the nominating committee, where the recommendations of those reviews appear to have been ignored, disappeared into a black hole, etc., etc. But the ATRT hasn't itself made any comment on the rights or wrongs of that, because I don't really think it's appropriate for us to do so. So I suppose to a degree we've cherry-picked that recommendation out of the Boston Consulting Group report, but that's because it is actually, our understanding is it is actually before the board as a recommendation and has not been dealt with or has been oscillating on the spot for quite some time. Our very, very clear recommendation is that board members, directors, not liaisons, directors should be paid. I recused myself from the vote on that. I just want to say, in case anybody should think I didn't.
Dennis.
Just very briefly, that is on the task list of the Board Governance Committee.
Excellent. Okay, at this point, if you don't mind, as I said again, implementation is key here before we get to final recommendations. So what we'd like to do now is just scroll through, and hopefully we can make it in the time we have, about 40 minutes or so. But what I'd like to feedback on is, from the purpose of implementation, are these clear? Is there ambiguity somewhere? Flag it. Is it implementable? Are there barriers to implementation? Flag it for us, and we will go back as a team and recraft as need be. So you're at the top, and these, again, are the category that are focused on the board of directors. Go ahead, Chris.
I want to just pick up on a point that Rita makes. I think it's actually very important. Just in case anybody thinks any differently to this, no one is suggesting that because you sit through this extraordinarily exciting process of reading out the resolutions and say, hey, it looks okay, that means that when you actually have a chance to read the report, you can't say it's not. I just want to make sure, in case there's any doubt in anyone's mind, that we're not suggesting that this is a binding. It's just we would like, if there's something obvious to you, we would like to know about it so that we can make a change. If we can, we can consider making a change. Really, that's all there is to it.
We, of course, we know you've read it. No. Have we been through the first section? Does anybody have any inputs on the first section on board governance? Vonda?
It's about the implementation. I have read said many times in public that implementation for board compensation will be not easy considering different legislations and different part of transfer of money from developing countries to developing one. So there is a lot of things that I already raised, and I could discuss it later, but just to raise this point that it's not easy to implement that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And yes, we're happy to take any comments after this session as well. Thank you.
So, Vonda, just so that we're clear, if we say in our discussion on board compensation, recognizing that there may be challenges in implementing, then move as quickly as possible to that would be the yeah okay yeah got it. We have Steve.
Okay. Any other comments on section one, if you will, Steve?
This is all good. Also, following up on this compensation issue and to the question that Bruce asked earlier about the liaisons, we're in some state of discussion about the exact role of liaisons and to what extent they are essentially indistinguishable from directors versus completely separate and a whole different group in a way. So that this is not the right time or place to sort that out, except to say that that will add to the complication of the compensation problem.
Sure. Thanks for flagging that. Anything else on the first section? Dennis.
Sorry, Dennis.
I noticed there's some dates there. I think we need to do some planning work to make sure that we don't hang ourselves before we start, and that it's all feasible to do this quite large sets of things on a reasonable timescale.
Agreed, and that was one of the things we wanted to talk about as well. Something we just discussed in the room before we came to this session was asking for the board to help. We know there's a number of subcommittees that are working on specific areas. It would be very good for us to have our recommendation mapped to the respective subcommittees in the first hand, who's going to take on the task. Secondly, taking a look at the recommendations and understanding what is feasible in terms of implementation, the AOC calls for a follow-on review team of accountability and transparency in 3 years. But if you work the calendar, by the time the board gets to, the board has until June of next year to adopt whatever recommendations it's going to adopt and implement them. When you work the calendar, there's roughly a two-year window for implementation. So that's a fair amount of time. And we've talked about maybe the board implementing certain things before June that are easy to implement or starting the process. So, yes, we need whatever feedback you have on that point.
As a departing board member, I'll commit to anything.
And we'll take you up on that, Dennis. Okay, we're into section two, which is the GAC and board interaction recommendations. We did have a good session with the GAC. Help me here, Chris. Some of the feedback we got, specific feedback, one was around consensus. There's a recommendation that the GAC base its advice on consensus, and we got very clear feedback that they felt that adopting that as a hard rule would constrain themselves as a body, their work, their ability to deliver in a timely fashion.
That's not right. That's not correct. What in fact Bill D said was that that's what they do anyway, and that therefore it's not necessary. Now, the point that we tried to make was that I said in a meeting with the GAC that this section, particularly B, really does need to be read. All the recommendations are interwoven effectively. And the whole point about the consensus recommendation in Clause 12 is that it sits below 11, which says that we need to be absolutely clear when the GAC is giving advice. It is simply not acceptable for the GAC to say everything we say is advice. Done work. And the body of this report says that. The recommendation doesn't say it, but the body of the report says it. So the whole point about the consensus stuff is they need to get clear what they want to put forward as advice and what they don't. And that's where we got with that. We also got into a discussion, important discussion about the fact that they perceived our recommendation about higher involvement in the GAC as meaning that they weren't good enough, in the sense that they weren't important enough. And that's actually not what we meant, and we're going to have to do some clarifying wording on that, because what we meant was that we should consider having occasional higher level meetings with government people, etc. That was it. We didn't mean that the people who attend the GAC on a regular basis should be of higher rank, for want of a better term. But there's a lot of stuff on the board GAC relationship in these recommendations, and our main recommendation is that it goes back to the board GAC. It is dealt with in the board GAC joint committee.
Who's in the queue? Bruce.
I think I would concur that certainly it needs to be thrashed out, some of the stuff between the board and the GAC. But I think, ultimately, I think it's achievable. Just a comment I would make on 15 is it the frequency that matters or the length and the quality of the interaction that matters? Because I think... it's not just frequency. I think one of the problems we have in the meeting schedule this week, and we have for the last 10 years, is you sort of have a one-hour session with the GAC on something. We've got this particular meeting, we've got a lot of issues, and I think it's almost, I would prefer a two-day meeting with the GAC, and we just work it through. So I'd say it's not just frequency, it's potentially having some longer meetings that might be face-to-face, might even have a separate meeting altogether that's a face-to-face meeting between the board and the GAC, and we work through some stuff. So just a comment. It's not just frequency.
Thank you, Bruce.
Understood, Bruce.
Harold.
One thing to consider about interaction between the board and the GEC is that having a 20-people group meet a 60-people group and expecting to, without a proposed decision to come out of the discussion before the meeting starts, is, well, optimistic is perhaps a word I could use. So in this case, I think that focusing on the board as the board, working with the GAC as the GAC, might be counterproductive. We do need the board and the GAC to find mechanisms to work together that does not involve face-to-face meeting of all 80, or however many we are now. I don't see that in these statements, but I must admit to not having studied them in enough detail to be sure that it is not there.
Well, to be clear, the face-to-face meetings and how they're structured and arranged is not something that we were really specifically aiming for, and we also did underscore that the work of the joint working group between the board and the GAC looks to be a vehicle through which some of these recommendations should be worked going forward, and that's a good mechanism for that. Katim. I'm sorry. Who's in the queue? Bertrand and then Katim.
Thank you. It's just a comment regarding the recommendation 14. I was in the session with the GAC I attended and watched the exchange that was very interesting between Bildi and Brian on this very question of when the GAC intervenes. I think there is one, without getting into too much detail, there is one assumption and formulation that is often mentioned and which I think is not factually true, which is that the bylaws say that the GAC gives only advice to the board, and we need a way to find a better way to make the GAC intervene earlier. This is factually wrong, because actually the bylaws do not say that at all. They say that the GAC provides advice, general. And then there's another article that says, the advice of the Governmental Advisory Committee on Public Policy Matters shall be duly taken into account both in the formulation and adoption of policies, which explicitly means that it is not only at the board level, because the formulation of policies is the policy development process. What is important is that actually Article 1J of the bylaws that says that is immediately followed by the provision that when the board doesn't follow the GAC advice, then there are mechanisms that are being put in place. And the fact that it is in a single paragraph gives the impression that there's only GAC advice. The reality, as Bildi said, is that on the case of the new GTLD program, the GAC principles were provided early, and they actually did have an impact because it's one of the major reasons why the famous Recommendation 6 got got in there. Wrongly interpreted in the implementation, we all agree, but there was an impact on the policy development process. So I close by just suggesting that in looking at the bylaws, we need to make probably a clearer distinction between the fact that the GAC gives advice, as many other advisory committee, and that there could be two different mechanisms to explain what happens when this advice is taking place in the course of a PDP, and whether there is any provision for the SOs or the working groups to incorporate this advice, which is missing at the moment, and separate the fact that the remediation structure that exists today when there is a discrepancy between the GAC recommendation and the board decision, which exists, should be separated in the paragraph J. But I will send something in writing.
Thank you, Bertrand. Katim?
Hello. Thanks, Brian. My comment really is in two parts. The first is the reference to the recommendation that the board should place particular attention, focus on emerging nations in the developing world. I think that's a great recommendation, but I think it would have been great too if you could provide some further perspectives as to what you thought would be, starting off points, as it were, in this direction.
And also, I'd like to point out in the same vein, you mentioned that we should be paying particular attention to the need to provide multilingual access to ICANN records. I just want to point out that the issue of multilingual access to ICANN records is not something that's peculiar to the developing world. Indeed, it's something that affects quite a multitude of countries, and I think maybe we need to tease it out a little bit more, or at least tease them apart, so at least we don't conflate them. Yeah, thanks.
That point is well taken, and we'll clarify that to the extent that it's not in the final recommendations. Anything else on Section 2? All right, let's scroll on to the third section, which is public input processes and the policy development process. Reactions. Dennis.
In principle, I like and approve of the thrust of the Commons. I wonder how workable they are, and I haven't thought them through to try and test them out, but I fear a spiral of Commons and Commons and Commons. I know that's an implementation detail, but sometimes the detail is pretty hard.
I understand your concern. I think there's a sense about the comment and reply comment cycle that does have an effect of limiting an ever-growing list of comments, and you know, the management of the policy development process so that comments are entered at the right moment in time to move to the next stage of finalization is also part of that, so it's part management of the process problem. But comments and replies where the member of the community is expected to take the comments that were made by someone who has the opposing view and provide their arguments as to why that opposing view is not well-founded and should not be accepted and rejected by the board, if properly managed, can have a limiting effect because the party gets to say they're pro and they're con, and you've got, it's in a sense, a full record from that commenter. The other benefit that we saw, of course, is that this provides a very full record of comments from the board upon which it can rest its analysis and articulate its rationale for its decisions. Katim. Bruce.
Thanks. Just can you elaborate a little further on 18, because I wanted to understand that a bit as well. Did you mean that you've got, as I understand the comment process today, we get public comments and then the staff write a summary of those public comments, and then the staff then indicate when they do, so using the applicant guidebook as an example, the staff then indicate, you know, what was included or not included. Is that what you mean, the reply comment is a reply to what the staff have done? Or do you mean this is a cycle where people are doing a dialogue between parties? What would be really good is if you could give us an example of this, not just have the recommendation. If you can link to something where this has worked, so we have a working example, that would help me.
Certainly. It is intended to be a dialogue between the parties or the members of the community. So person A is advocating for, you know, oranges, and person B is advocating for bananas. And person A in the first comment cycle extols all the virtues of oranges to the board and why the board should select oranges, and person B extols bananas. Then you go to a reply cycle. Person A says, bananas are the worst fruit ever, and here's why. And if you do that, that's a mistake. And person B says, oranges are poisonous fruits, and if you adopt that, you know, things are going to go haywire. It's the dialogue between the parties, and it's the requiring the parties effectively to not only state what they're in favor of, but to give the board a rationale as to why the opposing view is ill-founded. So it really builds out a very full record of argumentation, if you will, that the board can then refer to. Yes, and examples, in Boston, we put, this is not an example, we put up an FCC decision on the wall, and this is jumping to the decisional part, but it's based on this comment cycle. And so in the FCC decisions, for example, you have an articulation of the position taken, the decision taken by the commission, and then they will go through, selectively, this industry association was in favor of releasing the spectrum because of X, Y, and Z issues, market efficiencies, consumer benefits, et cetera, and that's what. This association was opposing the release of this spectrum because of this reason and that reason. That's analysis. But what's come prior is the comment and reply comment cycle from those two different associations that has provided the board with a very full body of analysis and argumentation. And that's really the point, because right now that doesn't exist in the ICANN comment process. Katim?
Thanks, Brian. I also have to say that I'm in total agreement with the concern that was expressed by Dennis about the impact of these recommendations on the implementation of the review process. Because if we inject the reply comment process, I mean, I imagine, as I understand what you've said, that this is not going to be a real-time reply to the comments. In other words, there's going to be a lag between the comments and the reply to the comments. And, of course, that it's very easy to imagine a situation like that. If you have many documents or processes to comment on, that it could actually conceivably increase the length of the policy development process. So that's one issue there. Then the other issue is, don't we presently have mechanisms for providing the very function we intend the reply comment period to address? That is, I'm thinking to myself now, since we're talking about improving the public participation mechanisms in ICANN, revamping the website and all of that, what if we have on the ICANN website forums where people can directly reply, you know, comments or reply to comments that have been posted on the website by people who are, you know, who are commenting on documents? I mean, that way we don't have to have an extended period of a reply comment, but people can comment on the documents or on the reply or the comments on the documents as they come in. I think if we manage the process, it might actually achieve the same process and expedite things. And finally, you mentioned that this reply comment period should be of a fixed duration. And I think we might need to consider that, because it's very possible that we have topics that are more controversial than others, and topics that are more urgent than others. And so I think we might need to have some flexibility built into the number of, you know, the period that we want to have for the comment period. Thanks.
Thanks, Katim. You're right. To have a distinct reply comment cycle means that there has to be a comment cycle that closes, and then all parties get to review the comments filed and have an opportunity to digest them and then craft their reply comments. So it does add a distinct cycle and some additional time. It doesn't necessarily have to extend the timeline of the policy development process, however. And, you know, clearly there's been some policy development processes that have dragged on and on and on in the past. This, if properly managed, can not only be done in a way that doesn't extend it, but the real benefit, too, is that it provides the board with a very fulsome body of argumentation. And at the end of this process, if there's one thing we heard from the community often enough, it's, have I been heard? You know, the decision comes out, and the fact that it doesn't appear to them that their comments have been taken into consideration is a constant stress that I think this approach can help to address, because if the board does adopt the recommendation of articulating the basis for its decisions, has this wonderfully fleshed out argumentation basis, and literally you come to your conclusion of what's the right decision, you've got these arguments to point to in your decision, you've got these arguments to point to, but then to discount and the reasons why. So I think as a package, it can be managed so it doesn't extend unduly, and as a package, it provides broader benefits. Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, Brian. I'd like to take up the same theme just touched upon by Katim and say that we in the Public Participation Committee of the Board are dealing with this precisely at this moment. We are beginning to look at the public comment process as one of the means of enhancing public participation. So we don't have anything to offer yet as a published paper or anything online. We are starting that process. But I'd like to mention two or three things. The first is that in the findings and recommendations of the Berkman Center, for instance, I must say that we are, of course, in the committee very pleased that public participation is recognized as an important element now of ICANN's work, and that gets rather high marks. But it points out also the limitations of using public participation as one of the chief tools of, how should I say, the responding or the transparency mechanisms in ICANN. It's just one of the tools. But using the public comment process and refining it certainly will improve what we're looking for. In the various things which are mentioned here, I think that the one of the concerns we have is what is the most effective way to obtain community input in terms of timelines, in terms of relevance. So what you have described, Brian, as the coming and going or the toing and froing is certainly part of that. So I just wanted to signal that we're working on that now, and naturally we will take very much into consideration what you have just mentioned. But in reverse, I think that it would be useful if the ATRT had a closer look in the coming weeks and months at what is being done in the PPC.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. And I want to note that we're out of business in a month, so it won't be months. But thank you for that. It's very important because yours is one of the committees that's working specifically on a recommendation. So any input you can give to us in terms of finalizing this recommendation, it's all about implementation and how we get there. And this one, you know, is going to require, as you know, the inputs of ACs, SOs, the bodies who are involved at the bottom of the ICANN policymaking process to make some fundamental changes. So we'd welcome any additional thoughts you have with an eye on implementation before we finalize. Thank you. I've got Cheryl.
Thank you. Just following on very nicely, thank you, Jean-Jacques, for what you're saying, because obviously the committee, the Public Participation Committee, is key to a lot of the implementation that is going to have to happen. But going back to Katim's point with the forums, we, of course, have had experience as various staff members have led different opportunities to engage with public, and part of that's been experimental work of Public Participation Committee, where we have, in fact, had forum and to some way went a little way to experiment de facto on this toing and froing. But what isn't clear to a community that is used to a particular form of public comment is how that is dealt with. And that iterative discussion process, whilst it has its place, is part of a toolkit. And what needs to happen, if I can suggest, would be that the implementation needs to look at having a toolkit where all the tools and how you use them are clearly understood by all parts of the community. And boy, that'll be going a long way to making a lot of people happy.
Thank you. I've got Mike Silver, and then Bertrand and Harold.
Thanks, Brian. I think Cheryl put it very, very well. Just to add slightly to that without taking too much time, I'm very comfortable with the process, and it was no surprise when you indicated that part of that recommendation came out of a discussion on an FCC decision, because it sounds exactly like a regulator's decision. I should make John Jeffrey happy by saying that ICANN is not a regulator. I should also indicate that I'd be very happy with that process, because it'll help keep more lawyers in employment, and in these tough economic times, that, of course, is very important. That being said, I think it is important that people get a chance to respond to each other. I wouldn't like to get to a situation where we do hold hearings. I don't think we've reached that level yet. But I think Cheryl's point is very important, in the sense that we have multiple structures, and what we don't want to do by creating public debates at ICANN meetings when people are able to stand up in a forum and engage with each other and get involved in a debate around a table in an open forum, however it may be, which is incredibly useful, but it is not conclusive. And we're not talking about the final stages of a final process through the stratified process. And I think we just need to be very clear that we don't overcomplicate some simple things at the moment, but more importantly, that we don't substitute a formal written comment process for the lively, very useful cross-constituency working group iterations, which currently contribute very significantly to the creature that is ICANN, and it makes it part of what it is, sometimes frustrating, but sometimes also incredibly wonderful in the way that it can operate and reach consensus. I would just suggest, and I understand that it's not the ATRT's role to now detail all of this, but I think there needs to be some language to recognize that it's not simply one or the other or adding in an additional phase, that there's a graduated approach and a whole range of tools that must be engaged. The last thing I'll say is, having looked at some of the public comments that come in on some of the topics that where we solicit public comments, the one thing where we do have to deal with issues is when we start getting form responses and when we start getting what I would regard as voting spam around a topic with no real contribution. And in that case, staff are very useful in just filtering and not sending junk through.
Thank you. Point taken. Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to, Michael, just pick up on, everybody who's spoken about this actually, just pick up on a couple of points. What we heard time and time again were there are sort of three main thrusts to this public comment thing. One is time in its many aspects. I didn't have enough time to comment. The documents were too, came too late before the meeting. I mean, you're never going to satisfy everybody, but time in that context was a major issue. The second one was the ability to respond. I don't feel that I have an ability to respond. So somebody puts in a public comment to something on the last day of the public comment period, and there's nothing I can do. If I can't make it to an ICANN meeting and I'm not prepared to stand up at the microphone, I really don't have a way of responding. That's the second point. And the third one is I want to feel I've been heard. I mean, one of the points about the American legal system compared to the English legal system is the American legal system has a thing called depositions where people actually go and talk, whereas in England we do it all on paper. And whilst I'm not a particular fan of the American legal system, one of the glorious things about depositions is that actually it stops a lot of stuff going to court, because people know that they have been heard, and then they stop because they, having been heard. And this is missing a lot of from a lot of this process. And so these recommendations are an attempt, at least in part, to deal with those three main issues.
Thank you, Bertrand.
Regarding 17 and 18, I was a bit puzzled by the expression stratified. I'm sure there's a better word, but the concept is good. The notion that there are different typologies of call for comments, which today is just under one label. It's a public comment, period, where in many cases the list could be expanded. It's not necessarily your responsibility to identify the wordings, but in the implementation, it will be very important to have a very clear types of consultations. Let's put it this way. The second thing is, there probably is a need to insert a concept that has been missing in many of the discussions regarding public comments, which is community interaction. Public comment is basically a reaction to something. It can be a call for input, but it is not about interaction. And it is connected to the second point on 18 about the reply comment. There's a big distinction between, for instance, the notice of inquiry call for input, which is an early stage. Then there are big cases where there's a request for comments on something or an interaction. The problem with the current software that is being used is that it's basically a list of the submissions. It's not a threaded forum. And there are cases where you want just a list of submissions, but there are other cases where this reply comment needs a threaded forum, because there's nothing worse than submitting a comment that has to say, I am responding, and you put it in the title, I am responding to the comment that was posted 3 days ago by so-and-so, and it becomes untraceable in the thing. So it's about software tools. And I would like in this respect to mention that during the public participation board committee, there was a comment regarding the web redesign that is on the website redesign that is apparently underway at the moment, where we insisted, or the members present insisted on
incorporating a certain tool set that can be used by the community when they want to quickly set up a working group, mailing list, or things like that, without necessarily having to go through the staff in a part that is more participatory. And I think ALAC has a lot of information on that. I mentioned that because in implementation, the connection with the staff part that would be dealing with the web redesign might be actually an element. Finally, the logical consequence of this notion is I think it would be wonderful if in the document the notion of PDP workflow were introduced. I was searching and the word workflow is not there. I think it is very important to document it better. The work of the PDP working group of the GNSO did a lot of work on the reform of the PDP. As Jean-Jacques indicated, the Public Participation Committee of the board is also thinking about the PDP in the implementation and maybe in your recommendations. It would certainly be useful to indicate that those parallel efforts need to be put in contact somehow, because at the moment it is addressing the two elements in a different manner and in parallel. And the last element is that we have recently experimented with a new format, which is the community working group or the cross-community working group, CWG, for the Rec 6. The status of those groups is not clear. They clearly serve a purpose, and I think it would be good to have a reference to the recent experience and an indication that it is needed to document further where they fit and what is their role. There's actually a very interesting interaction on the SOAC room.
Thank you, Bertrand. Harold, and then we're going to move on to the last category.
I'm sorry to be so late on the list, but I'm sorry. But my personal opinion is that the public comment mechanism today is absolute rubbish, designed to drive away all competent input and give a place for filing interesting statements from interested parties. The last part is actually good. The usual reaction I get when I ask people, why don't you comment, is, what's the point? The usual thing that happens is that people try to use the comment forums. They see all the rubbish they are associated with and run away, never come back. What you are proposing will do nothing to fix that, as far as I can tell, but require about 14 full-time staff in order to do the processing of the comments that come in from anyone, everyone under the sun. One of the reasons why this is horribly useless is that ICANN is open, transparent, and does not require anyone to show standing in order to have their comments considered. In some cases, it is very, very easy to summarize comments in that you just mentioned the name of the commenter. Sometimes the single name of the single commenter, and you know exactly how much value to place upon the comments. Now, having a mechanism for serious bodies to file serious considerations is in fact valuable, important, but the current comment mechanism, while achieving that, also opens up so many denial of service attack opportunities on ICANN that people have been taking advantage of by providing their comments again and again and again, that the only people who are playing the commenting game are the ones with a very deep vested interest in seeing a particular outcome in the process. I'm sorry, these recommendations are minor but expensive fixes to a system that is more deeply broken than I think these comments, the report seems to admit of. That is my personal opinion, of course, but it's a rather strong opinion. We need to rethink the mechanism for comments in such a way that we separate the filing of papers, that the free-flowing discussion that we need, and the processing of serious commentary into a form that the board can actually use to make decisions. I think I've made myself unpopular with most of the people present here now, so I'll stop. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Harold. We need to move on to the fourth section, but Jean-Jacques, you're next, please.
You want to scroll up? Scroll up.
We have about 8 minutes left.
Very briefly, just in order to placate my colleague on the board, Harold, that's a realization of this kind of problem, which was, I must say, formulated in not as vehement a way as you have just done, but that was useful also as a reminder. But this has been brought to our attention, and that's why we have asked staff to develop a certain number of tools. And yesterday we were given a briefing on the PPC, on the Public Participation Committee. We were given a very interesting briefing on some of the tool sets which are envisaged. It was all the presentation we were given by staff was mainly about the refurbishing of the website of ICANN, etc. But it also includes tools which precisely accommodate your kind of concern, which is that the sort of run-of-the-mill comment, which I think you called was rubbish, that could be taken care of by some tools on some parts of the website more easily, so that the more valuable policy-oriented stuff would be treated in a much more prominent way.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. We do have up on the screen, and we have just a few minutes, but would like to capture reactions from the directors with regard to the fourth category of recommendations. Please. Shireen? Peter?
It is not just about the fourth category. As you know, I'm a new member, just joined in, and I appreciate all the work that's been done here, but I get a feeling as a new member that there are 30 recommendations for the board, and I would really appreciate from the ATRT to give an indication of priority. What is important, what is less important? Or is it, in your view, all of those are important? The other feeling I get is there anything that you have found that the board is doing right? And is there a recommendation they should continue to do? It seems like a very negative report. And there's not the balancing side, say, we found this positive. Maybe I didn't understand the brief, but it feels like this, seeing this for the first time.
Thank you very much, and your perspective as a new director is very welcome. We think they're all important. This is our charter under the affirmation of commitments. This is the first review team on accountability and transparency. All these recommendations map to the requirements of paragraph 9.1, and we feel each and every one of these recommendations is important. To put some color on some of the feedback we received from the community, I think in our discussions we recognized that some fixes might have to do with nothing more than perception or just minor fixes, and that the majority of the stress seems to come from the community saying, I haven't been heard, or my comments and inputs go into a black box and something comes out on the other end and I don't know what happened inside that black box. So to put some color on what informed a large portion of the recommendations you're looking at was that feedback from the community. At the same time, all we're looking at here is the recommendations. There is a complete report, and I know that in certain instances we we commended the good work that was done by the board. Public participation, in particular, Jean-Jacques and the work that his committee has done, we noted that the skills building on the board, we recommended that that's been an undertaking that has been very positive with good results and encouraged to do more of that. So we endeavored to recognize very good things that are taking place, and to the extent that it came across as a negative report, that certainly wasn't the intent. Katim?
It's taken me years to keep that away from Bruce.
Talk about losing it. Brian, if I may jump to recommendation 30, which is like the overarching recommendation, I was really glad to see you mention the need for having what you call a regular schedule of internal interviews, internal reviews. But what I'd like to suggest that you actually go beyond that, rather than talk about a schedule, to actually talk about a policy on internal review. And I say this because just about a month or two ago, I submitted to the board a one-page brief on evaluation, which I think is a function that really needs to be developed and looked at more strategically in the organization. Because once you have the policy, then things like schedules and budgets and, you know, the whole mechanism about the internal monitoring and evaluation function would actually fall in place. But I think this represents a very good start. And I just want to encourage you a little bit more, think about it, you know, in a more holistic perspective rather than just looking at schedules of the reviews here. Thanks.
Thank you. Before we close, any other reactions? Dennis.
Could I just make a point that what you've heard and are individual reactions by individual board members, and the board as a whole, for example, may not share my enthusiasm for these recommendations. So, yes, you have heard individual responses, but obviously we need to have an opportunity to consider it as a board as a whole and to provide a board response rather than the individual responses. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, well, to all the directors and to Peter, thank you very much. This has been a very, very constructive interaction. We'll have a public session again tomorrow from 2 to 3:30, and we'll be working with you as we drive toward final recommendations by December 31st. Thank you all.